To speed up a bit, I won't say too many more words, and I would just ask you, the next talk is from Sebastian Manke about what he learned, which tools are good working with microservices and so on. So yeah, please give some warm hands to Sebastian.
Yeah, thank you for being here at this late evening slot on Sunday evening, Foscon. Okay, my microphone also seems to work. If I'm too loud, raise your hands and I will be a little bit smaller. So in the last years, I had the chance to work on different microservice platforms, some private things, some things in company or on a customer side. And I came to, in different platforms, to similar problems and solutions. And I came to the idea to share some of them to you. So it's, I hope it's able, you are able to follow my talk this time, because I have very different topics brought together, which are essential for me when I build up a microservice platform. But the topics are sometimes not so related, so not just a Kubernetes or Swarm thing talk. So what's a microservice platform for me, or what mean microservices for me? For me, it's especially something of having independent components and building self-contained systems. And this is not totally clear, because a lot of people are also doing microservices, but don't have that self-contained of the services in mind so much. For me, it's very essential that I can build independent teams in a bigger project which are able to work on their component, on their service, and able to ship their own parts without too much interfering with the other teams and services. So it ends up in a vertical architecture where the services follow the bounds of the bounding contexts, so they have a functional responsibility and should be isolated among this functional responsibility. Of course, in this meaning, they should be loosely coupled and should not be too dependent on other services. Otherwise, you earn nothing out of this infrastructure, but just have a distributed system, which is very complex if everything is tied together and you have too much dependencies. And the most essential idea, I think, is that it's not the way to build the components to reuse them afterwards or sometimes, but more the idea of building components to be able to delete them, to replace them, and create drop-in replacements, which can be the evolution of your platform. So this is some points that you understand why I'm choosing those tools. Mostly when I start a new platform and a new project, I have in mind such an architecture. So this is just taken out of the last project I was in, and just a high level draft on how this looks like. So I have a platform out of multiple services. In general, it's a lot more than that. So in the last bigger platform, we had about 50, 60 individual container images, so maybe 30 functional microservices in there. But in general, it's the same. You have the services. You mostly have something like an edge service for the front end, so something where your requests come in. You have the similar thing at the back end for administrative stuff, and you have a lot of integrations from external systems. And you have some internal services for maintaining some stuff, having some forms or things like that for maybe CMS, something like that. And you have, I left out the databases. For me, the databases are from a viewpoint part of the service, but you also have something like search clusters or different views of your data in there. And you need something to do data integration, so messaging system or so on. I will come to a lot of those points during the rest of the presentation. When you have this, you have to struggle against a lot of things. You have a lot of challenges to master. I divide them in infrastructure problems and more application problems, but it's DevOps, it's mostly both of them. On the infrastructure side, of course, you now have a problem in your platform with distributed deployment. So you don't have to ship your one monolithic application, but you have a bunch of small services which have to be deployed. You have something to do with service discovery. So of course, they should all be high available, so you have a lot of them, and they have to discover each other and load balancing and things like that. You have to do centralized logging and monitoring with health checks and such things. So you have to do a lot on the infrastructure side to be able to maintain such a platform. And I will come in to some solutions triggering this point or solving this point. And on the application side, you also have a lot of challenges when you want to maintain your vertical thinking and the independence of the services. One is that you came to the UI, and UI is the user wants one UI. The user doesn't care about microservices. So you have an UI composition problem. You have to do something like a distributed security context with login management. You have now data replication, so individual services which need the same information or similar or overlapping information. And you have, of course, a huge number of small applications. So from a memory and CPU consumption point, it's a little bit different. OK, but now this should be the, I will end up with the theoretical part and just show some very practical approaches to how my favorite solutions are towards these challenges. So I'm doing Docker, I guess, now since 2.5 or maybe 3 years in real projects. And I started smoothly, but now I'm, since a year or so, I'm very, very hard on this trip. So for me, in each project, each platform, I try to Dockerize everything. So the host has nothing. The host has a Docker daemon, and if possible, nothing else. And everything can be easily Dockerized. So there's no need to deploy something without Docker, I guess, today. Why? Because it's, for me, very easy to handle everything as a small microservice, even if it's a real big blob. So in one project, we had Type 3 CMS with a lot of gigabytes data in there. So it was a lot of functionality in there. So nothing like a microservice, but we put it in a Docker container. And from a maintenance point, it's just a service. Just ship it. And the other part is that the requirement for the host is very minimal. So we are very easy in setting up new nodes and making new setups. Currently, Kubernetes is very popular, but I'm still a fan, or I can't say still, because Docker Swarm mode is relatively new. So I'm a fan of the simple way of using Docker without all the Kubernetes overhead. Of course, this heavily depends on the project and the platform, but in my case, I mostly come to the point where we have a lot of projects and smaller teams, not so really big, so that's not I like it not to have also the maintenance and complexity overhead of Kubernetes with me. And currently Docker Swarm, so we're using it even with the Swarm proxy mode, if somebody remembers. So since more than a year ago, it's a very buggy thing, but also does its job. And the Swarm mode nodes, I guess, it's really good. And for most use cases I have, it's really sufficient. And it's easy to develop for development, because you can work locally with your Docker Compose, and it's the same on a production system, and it's very easy to deploy that way. Swarm gives you everything, well, not everything, but a lot which you need. So with WARM, you don't have to make most things complicated. It's very easy to make discovery there. Swarm gives you overlay networks between the nodes. You have DNS for all your containers which you deploy, and you have load balancing between the containers. So it's very easy. You can introduce health checks in your Docker file, and Swarm honors them. So a small demo of Swarm setup I made. Before I set up some nodes on DigitalOcean, just to show you the things, so registry, which we don't care about, a manager node, where the Swarm manager is, and three worker nodes. I have a small script, so it was very easy to set up this Swarm environment. It's just one line of batch shell script. Of course, this is not production ready, it's just a fast Swarm setup without error checking or anything. So I create an initial Swarm manager node with Docker machine. Everything against the DigitalOcean API with a DigitalOcean access token. Then I take a join token from the Swarm master, and I create some nodes, three nodes here, and then let the nodes join the master. So nothing more than that, just set up with Docker machine, which is very nice for smaller things. When you come to a bigger platform, Docker machine will not be flexible enough if you need more networks or things like that on the virtual machines there. And then I've launched it before, of course, because it takes some minutes to set up the virtual machines. Then with Docker machine, I can see all those machines. There are a few others here, but we see the, I can grab on DigitalOcean. So we have the master here, and we have the three nodes. And I can select now with Docker machine. Set some environment variables so that my Docker commands now are going through the Swarm environment and not my local one. So I can now show you with node ls Docker node ls that I have now set up the cluster, and it's that easy. So in just few lines of shell script, I have set up the virtual machines on DigitalOcean and created a Swarm cluster. I'm not a Kubernetes expert, but I guess it's a little bit more to do to have a Kubernetes setup in most cases. Sorry. Okay, as I said, Swarm can do a lot of things for you. So deploy services redundantly, having overlay networks, and so I have created a very small demo service. I called it content because it just should deliver some content over HTTP. Nothing big, just a small Go script having two routes. One should deliver an HTML, and one is returning the healthy state, and I can do a post to make it unhealthy, and then it returns 500. So just a very small service which returns a little bit HTML, and I can say, okay, now you're unhealthy, and then returns an error just to demonstrate it. I've created a Docker container out of that and put it into the registry, and I can create a Docker Compose file for this basic example and to just deploy it. So this is a Docker Compose file where one service is listed. It's called content. I declare the image I want to use, and then most people will not know from Docker Compose because it's Swarm specific. I can write down some deployment criteria and and say gives Swarm the information how to deploy it. So I say it's a replicated service, create two replicas out of this, and don't put it on the master or on the manager node. In general, every node in a smaller setup also could be a manager, so that I don't have to make the decision to have a manager and worker nodes, but in this offset I have one manager and three worker nodes, so I want to separate it. And of course, I publish a port. So how to deploy this in the Swarm cluster? There's a relatively new command, docker stack deploy. I give this the compose file and the name. And then it creates a default network for this and creates this service. So with docker stack services, I now can list the service and see, okay, two instances are running of this thing. This docker ps, docker stack ps, I also can see the real tasks of the service, so I have now one instance on node 2 and node 1. And as you remember, I published a port 80, in the Docker Compose, and this now brings to me the possibility to access this port, and the cool thing is I can access it on each node. So it's currently running on node 1 and 2, so I can copy over the node 3 IP address and get the result there. So the exactly same port is now available on all nodes, even on the manager node. And there's internally a virtual IP for this service, and independent of the virtual machine where I access the port, it's distributed with load balancing to the right one. So I also created the DNS entry for that. Frostcon Monka.io. Ah, okay. Thank you. So of course you see it here, and I mentioned that I can change the healthiness, so I post just data false there. And now you see, I guess I've, oh no. Okay, of course I have to pick the right one. Now you see it's toggling. So sometimes I pick the one, and now it's stable again. So now it has healed itself. How does this, has this gone? With Docker PS, now I see, okay, the formerly running service on node 1 was shut down, and there was started a new one just running 40 seconds ago, which is already healthy, or healthy again. This is done by the health check in the Docker file. I've written down a health check command, which is also relatively new, and just had a curl command there to check the index page and give a bad feedback if there are even 500 code returns there. So Docker monitors every 3 seconds the Swarm, monitors every 3 seconds the service, and if it's not healthy, it just throws it away and starts a new one. And so the load balancing fixes itself. Okay. Just remove it, it's out of the way for the next example. Of course, in my architecture, I had the edge services for routing in and routing in from the backend side. So One of my biggest problems in Microsoft architectures at the most time are HTTP routing things. So I have different resources here, and they have to be dispatched to different services. So for example, the default one should go to a service, maybe my CMS or things like that, and I have a block maybe, or a shop subsystem or so, and I have to arrange them in an API gateway or call it edge service, however, to make some HTTP routing there. There are different solutions out there. All of you, I guess, have seen reverse proxy configurations with Apache and Nginx, so nothing to show here. One thing which is, for me now, since the time, a replacement for Nginx is the Kedi web server. It's a relatively new, very modern web server written in Golang. It's quite good, very extensible, and quite fast, and already very stable. It has a lot of features. So for example, let's encrypt and support embedded, and good reverse proxy and load balancing capabilities, JWT login and access control features, Git checkout, Hugo, static site generator, over plugin mechanisms. And since it's written in Golang, and I currently prefer Golang as my first choice language, it's very extensible for me. And it's doing HTTP 2 since the beginning, and also has support for HTTP push, if you like that. So it's really, really cute and modern, and a good community behind that. So let's make a proxy configuration with Kedi. So Kedi compose. I have a compose file. And what I have there, I have the Kedi server, the web server. It's front-end proxy. I have, again, my Docker image with this content go application, and I have two others. I have just a vanilla WordPress here, which is not configured, just to show you this block resource, and I have an Nginx, which should deliver any static things, for example. So I call it static. Kedi, pam-pa-dum-pa-dum. It's very simple. It's just a small Docker image there. I can download it and write down the plugins I want to have while downloading it. So nothing big here. And I have a Kedi file with the configuration there. So this is then a manual configuration. There is not a big dynamic here in there. I've configured the domain names and the schemas. As I mentioned, it is able to do automatic Let's Encrypt TLS. So I say, OK, my email address for Let's Encrypt is Manke. And then I have some proxy configuration. So I proxy /content to content, block to WordPress, block VP admin to WordPress. And as a special thing, I show you the Git extension. So it's able to just configure a Git repository, which is then dynamically pulled from Kedi web service to directly have content from Git repository, and you can update it and so. So I pull my slide desk, which I'm using here, also into the service. And I have a second configuration for another subdomain with the proxy configuration to this static Nginx I had in my Docker Compose. So I end up with a similar setup like here. So this is the content, this is block, and some static service. Okay, so of course the command is the same, Docker stack deploy. So it's a Kedi compose, and we name the stack Kedi. So create some services. So now it's Docker stack LS shows me there is one stack with four services. And I can show the service. I see, okay, They are all fine, two of two replicas there. In this configuration, I have only one replica for Caddy because the Let's Encrypt challenge for the automatic SSL certificate isn't working with load balancing. There's an alternative then, so you can do a DNS challenge, which is also possible, but not so easy to show so fast. So now you see the slide deck, which was pulled from the Git repository from Caddy server. And you also see now this is HTTP. I can now change to HTTPS and have a valid Let's Encrypt certificate here out of nothing. So not a lot to do there. And of course, all my routes are also working. So /content or /block or things like that, or even this Froscon static subdomain is pointing to the Nginx. So nothing special, just a handmade reverse proxy configuration. In a bigger microservice architecture where I want every team to ship their code independent and the services to be independent of other components, of course, it's not such a nice idea to maintain your reverse proxy configurations in one single component and configuration, because you may end up with a lot of them, and it's sometimes not so nice that always when you want to deploy new services or change the routings of services, that all service changes also require changes in your edge service in your single configuration. There is the idea of making this dynamic, and then Caddy is other way. The proxy configuration also has some dynamic lookup possibilities, but I'm not using them. I've used Fabio a lot. Fabio is a very fast and very stable reverse proxy, which is able to discover the services dynamically in a console, which is a service registry. And then you can create, or on each node, you have to set up the registrator service, which discovers the upcoming Docker services, and you can put labels there or environment variables with the path prefixes, and then they end up in console, and Fabio picks them up. Fabio is very cool, but limited to this console approach, which is not so nice, I think, because you then need this registrator, and it's a bit hassle of having this infrastructure then, but has done a lot of good work for me. What I prefer more now, but I don't have much experience with this, but it's broadly used, is Traffic. It's written with the K at the end, so it's a French name. This is a reverse proxy with a very dynamic reverse proxy with a lot of backends. So it's able to pull the reverse proxy configuration out of different sources. So the feature set is very big. You can go to Traffic.io and take a look on all the features. So it also has, of course, Let's Encrypt support for SSL, circuit breakers, and you can do a lot more things with this. But even the simple use cases are simple. And it has a backend for Docker Swarm. So I can use it to dynamically look up the services I bring up in my Docker Swarm environment and then route them. And of course, I will show it to you. So first remove this Caddy stack. Yeah, so this is the correct spelling of Traffic. Okay, similar example, but now with Traffic. In my Docker Compose, I have again this content service, I have again this WordPress service, and again an Nginx image, which I call static here. But instead of Caddy, now I have the traffic. I use the official image for that, and yeah, I give it some commands. I say, okay, yeah, please use Docker as backend and use Docker in swarm mode, not just one local Docker. I give him base domain. They say watch, so update your configuration whenever something changes. And I say, okay, please serve also your nice web UI. Then I publish some ports, so HTTP, of course, and the 8080 for the web UI. I have to deploy traffic on the manager because it needs the events from the manager of the swarm cluster to see all the services. And I have to mount the Docker control socket into the image because, yeah, traffic needs any way to connect to the Docker. Of course, I also could be able to use the HTTPS connection to Docker here. And then my services can get labels. So I'm able to give my swarm services labels for traffic, and then traffic can scan the services which are deployed there, see the labels, and build up the configuration dynamically. And if you ever try to do this, be sure to pick the labels feature of the deploy part here. It took me sometimes an hour because you can also use labels at the container level, and then it's something different. So I label it and say, okay, my content should be published. Port 80 of this service should be used, and as front-end rule, this should be available in this under this host. For WordPress, similar, I say, okay, the same host, but only at this path prefix. And Nginx at a different subdomain. So I can just deploy my services, annotate them with labels, and traffic will pick them up, hopefully. So we again, Docker stack deploy. Bum, ba, dum, ba, dum. Oops. So it seems to work. So now see, I have deployed my content to replicas, Nginx, traffic, and it's forwarding those ports and WordPress. And now I can go here to port 8080, and there I see the traffic UI. It's really nice, so I can see they have incoming routes and backends for that, so I can see the three incoming routes and the three backends there, and I see here the individual backend services which are then used in load balancing. So of course, or hopefully, this also works. Yeah, so I have again my different routes here. With traffic, and now as soon as I scale something or so, I think it's Docker service scale. I hope the traffic was directly able to pick it up. Now here it is. So as you know, I have four backends for that, and traffic is now dispatching this route to all those backends. Traffic is dispatching it directly to the containers. I guess it's not using the load balancing of the Docker Swarm cluster there, but it's doing its own load balancing and directly picking up the individual services. Okay, back to the presentation. So these are my solutions for dynamic routing, which I think is very fine because you don't have to change your infrastructure whenever you change something on a service. Next challenge. Next challenge is logging. I guess most of you have already heard something about Elasticsearch, Logstash, Kibana, or things like that. I guess it's really important to invest on a good logging infrastructure with a distributed microservice platform. I don't like Logstash, and last time I tend to use Fluentd. It's a little bit better. I'm not happy with even with Fluentd. I guess it's also not so nice. Would be better to have a log shipper so that you can use Docker local logging and then ship afterwards. But it's okay for the most cases. But the thing I want to mention here is the way how I prefer to log, because I think text logging is something from the 80s. I'm also something from the 80s, so it's still okay. But I think we can do better. And so I try to use structured logging wherever possible. And give them some semantic and make a good log convention. So all services should write to standard out and standard error, and this should be the best case JSON records, and we have in our project some logging conventions which they should follow. So for example, every service should do access logging, and we have a fixed scheme for that, and application logs should look similar. And call logs, so for outgoing calls, so the opposite of the access log, or lifecycle events or so. Just show you some of them. Application log may look this way, so fixed set of how the levels are described, type, it's application log, and then a fixed set of attributes there, so a good logging convention. We always try to use correlation IDs so that when an incoming request splits up to all the services, you are able to trace it in the services. So the simple thing is to create a correlation ID in an outermost service and dispatch it give it with the headers to the next services so that you are able to filter an outgoing HTTP or incoming HTTP request by its correlation ID then. And each service is able to, on the logging, to introduce different fields, maybe user ID or things like that. Access log looks similar, but of course has some HTTP terms in there. So in the method or things like that, for example. And the call log, very important in the call log. Also, of course, having correlation ID and the duration. So then you are able to very easily figure out which are my cost expensive microservices. Why is this browser call taking 2 seconds? Which of those maybe 20 services involved, hopefully not 20, but 5 or 10 services involved is calling this. And what I like very much are lifecycle logs, so that every service reports with a lifecycle event I was started, or I was failing, or somebody give me a quit signal, I'm terminating now, things like that. Some years before, I thought everything for monitoring should be metrics and health resources and things like that. But for me, it turns out that it's sometimes Prometheus. It's okay, but it's sometimes a little bit too complex to really get that data and work with that data. So I also tend the way to report metrics in the logging events and then do statistics over Kibana or so. Okay, this more worthy part on the infrastructure thing. Next thing is on the application part. The infrastructure helps us already to avoid a monolith a little bit, but we can do better in some part and have different additional challenges there. I want to repeat just a few slides of a talk I had done years before here at Foscon. It was about vertical thinking, just that you know why I choose this technical solution I come to soon. So when I have a classical application approach, I had this three-tier application. Wow, very good, very cool. From the 90s, I guess, or last decade. Then we came to the SOA idea. Wow, cool, let's make services. We had services already in SOA. So make the services smaller, give them maybe their own data, then make business. So persistent service, then make business service, all of that. But the most time, the thinking in the SOA times also was, okay, and then at the end, create one big application in front of that or one monolithic UI and just use those services. So the world was only a little bit better. For me, and this is a way of thinking, but I guess there are a lot of people which have the same mindset. The essential thing in a microservice way is to have self-contained services and vertical thinking from the database up to the front end. So microservice should be, it may consist out of some services even, but there should not be a layer which already bundles everything together. I didn't want that with the Edge service, and I don't want to have this bundling again in the UI. Of course, there are a lot of use cases where you have a mobile application or so, where it's, again, possible because an mobile application is a monolith, and then you consume the services, so then you're in an easy world. Or if you create a single-page application, which is also suitable for a lot of use cases, then you're also, again, in most times with the monolithic UI. But in the web, you still have the chance and still have the big worth, I guess, to deliver server-side rendered pages, which are at least pre-rendered and then at the dynamic parts and content. And I believe that in a microservice world, at best, every service delivers its own UI. But of course, when every service delivers its own UI, the user wants to have it's one UI, so I need some glue, something to put everything together. And I think in the last project, we found a good approach on that and created a library I will show you, which is able to do such a UI composition. And the goal is to have different components where each component just delivers a fragment from the thinking point, just a fragment of HTML so that you can build it up together. It was the idea with portals 10 years ago, and I guess everybody here who has done portals hates it. But of course, the need of having different modules and bring the things together is a need. So it was natural that the solutions came up there. And this all of this browser and UI component, front-end JavaScript component stuff we see currently is also the same need. And we tried to solve it on the server side this way, and we have created a library. It's also open source, Golang library. It's called libcompose, and it's a library which is able to do this simple aggregation. The idea is that each service, maybe here it's said the best, that each service delivers its own fragments, but HTML fragments are nothing nice. You can't view them in the browser. So if you just put the fragment part in the browser and you need scripts and title tag and things like that, so we came up with the idea, and not only we came up, so some came up with the idea that each service should just deliver a fully valid HTML where the fragments it delivers are filled. So we created this libcompose, which is able to pass some, like a template engine, to pass some special HTML directives so that fragment composition can be done there. Then the libcompose, or the libcompose is able to fetch the HTMLs from all the services in parallel. One is declared at the layout master, and then it can do the aggregation and templating there, and can take care of scripts or deduplication of title tags or so, to put them in a head from all the things and do deduplication there, things like that. So just to show you a small example, one service may deliver layout HTML, and it's just the usual HTML file, but has these include directives the libcompose is able to understand. And other services may deliver these fragments which are referenced here. So for example, I have an include of content subheader and content here. And another service may deliver this HTML with the content, where the body is taken for the content, but additional fragments, maybe the subheader or so, are declared. So with this way, I have this generic composition library there. Each service is able to produce HTML, and I can simply develop the service because I can see the fragments and I can get through it and test it individually. And then I could put it together, and this libcompose is able to fetch the things and make one big HTML out of this. One very, very nice thing in this approach for server-side rendering is that we introduced fragment-based caching in the libcompose. So when you try to do caching, you on the server side, you always hit the problem with personalization. So you, in general, want to cache a layout, you want to cache the navigation, you want to cache content part out of all small slow CMSs also, but you have some parts which are user specific, so the shopping basket icon with a number of items in there also, and they are not cacheable. So in a classic approach, you have a problem to do partially caching there, and with this approach, we can in the libcompose introduce fragment-based caching, so that those parts which are generic on the fragment side can be come out of the cache, and only the user-specific things has to be fetched on each request. Okay, this was libcompose. The documentation is not so nice. There is a lot, but I'm not sure if it's so understandable. If somebody is interested in it and wants to take a look on it, I'm very motivated to help out there and to bring this forward if somebody is interested in it. Zalando has a similar approach. They call it Taylor. It's also a component which the fit wasn't so perfect for us, but it's very similar. So if you like, pick this up, for example. Next thing is authentication. Next and last topic is authentication. In this distributed environment, you always come to the point where you need a user, where you need to log in, and all the services have to share this login and the security or identity context. And for me, the time of sessions is very over. Sessions, server-side sessions, classical thinking is nothing good, I think. It has some drawbacks because you have server-side state. You have dependencies between services because maybe one service is owner of the session. So the most infrastructures or architectures with a session which split up tend to become a session service, so one service where all the other services have a dependency to fetch the session data also. So it's not easy to model that nice with sessions, I guess. The solution for me is JWT, or in general, crypto tokens. So create a cryptographically token and push it to the browser. JWT is a RFC standard where you have a JSON payload and give it a signature, and not crypted, but encoded base64, and put it maybe in a cookie or with a single page app, provided as a header. And there are a lot of implementations out there, so you can pick different implementations and libraries for every programming language I know. And you have the choice of symmetric or asymmetric signature algorithms, so you're very flexible with this. So the JWT approach is that you have one service which is creating the JWT, give it to the client, and then the client can make calls to the server, and each service can get this JWT token, and because it's signed, it can validate the signature, and now on its own, if this token is trustable and if the content of the token is valid, without an additional call to central session service or things like that. So you have a perfectly loose coupling mechanism of login. Because I came to the point where I implemented similar ways of using crypto token or JWT in special in different projects, I said, okay, this was the last time, now I create a project out of this. And I started an open source project, LoginSurf, and it is already a little bit used, so I already have some stars and 4,000 Docker registry pulls, and as you see, already some contributors there, so it's really, really used. And LoginSurf is a small microservice which is just doing the login. So it's a standalone service, very, very limited, very minimal, where you just can have a login form or for REST API, for REST service, REST client endpoint there, and you just can do the login, and then you get the JWT token. It's available as standalone microservice, Docker container. You can use it as Golang library or even as Kedi plugin. So I showed Kedi, the web server, earlier, and I had made an official plugin out of this, so you can directly use it in Kedi, so that you have a login form there, and you can use it's playing nice together with the Kedi JWT plugin, which was already available there, and then you can, in Kedi, secure your paths based on criteria in the JSON payload. And LoginSurf, of course, you have to do the login against something, has a structure for plugin backends. There's an HTTP, an HT password file plugin. OSIAM is identity management. We have open sourcely developed in Tarent. You can use, there's a simple configuration you just can provide them. HTTP upstream was a contribution where you can just forward the authorization as HTTP, HT access to another location. And recently, I introduced the OAuth support for GitHub and got the contribution for Google OAuth support. So I will show you in a demo. We have still this traffic stack in our Docker Swarm. So I now can launch my login microservice. So I use the Tarent login surf image and provide it. So this is a little bit insecure. If you remember this, you have maybe 20 minutes time until I delete the keys here after the talk. So I provide login surf with the simple plugin to say, okay, there's a user Bob with password secret, and I give it the GitHub OAuth credentials for the GitHub API to do a login in this direction. And as we saw earlier with the other services, I have the traffic annotation, so that should be picked up from traffic then. And I declare the network here because each compose file defines by default its own network, and I want to have it joining the traffic network, which was defined earlier, so it should join this. So Docker stack deploy. So now I have this stack also. Let's see the traffic UI. It's not picking it up. Ah, no, it is. So here, the third one is now the login service picked up from traffic. So now it should be possible to go to /login. And yeah, now I see my login form. And I can say, OK, I'm Bob Secret. Yeah, that seems to work. Yeah, welcome, Bob. I can log out, and I also can go to GitHub and say, OK, yeah, please authorize. Bum-ba-dum-ba-dum. Back again. So this was taken, the data was taken from GitHub then. So I also have that. And if I want to say, OK, let's add Google also, I can just give it the Google. I was too lazy to set up it correctly. So now you see, I also would have been able to use the Google login. So this is a good good Microsoft, because it's very clear to say what the responsibility of this service is. Sometimes not so easy with Microsoft, I guess. Okay, I thought it was the last topic, but I think I will skip this one because there are some slides and it's on your convenience. I would skip it, but if you like to hear something about Kafka and data integration also, I can talk about it. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So, as I showed here, I always have the data integration problem, because when I have this vertical thinking, each microservice should have its own data. And I don't want to have two services with this connection to the same database. And I don't want to have one service calling another, because then it's runtime dependent on the other service. Of course, it's possible to say, yeah, I'm hardliner on this, or you also can say, yeah, sometimes I go this way, and sometimes I say, okay, I don't care about cross dependencies there. But in the way that you want to have independent data, you have a replication problem, because maybe every service needs to know about the user, or if you are in a shopping environment, there are some services which need to have the product data there. So maybe the shopping cart and the product search overview or things like that. And therefore, Kafka is a very nice solution. Kafka is a Apache project which is widely used. It's a distributed streaming platform. So you can think of it like a messaging bus, but a messaging bus normally has the idea of putting a message into the bus, and someone is taking the message and then it's out of the bus. Kafka has the idea of a more database-centric idea. So you put messages in there and they stay there forever, just in mind. Of course, you can, with retention time or so, or delete all the data there. So in Kafka, you have a topic. A topic can have partitions which are able to split them and shard them over a cluster, so it's highly fault tolerant. And a Kafka consumer can store its offset and then read in this message log. And Kafka also gives possibilities to store the read offset of the consumers, so that you can easily have a replication log there where multiple consumers have a read offset and can fetch the data then there. It's, the thinking is relatively equal to an SQL database log, which is also used for database replication or so, where all events are just written down and others come up and take them. And Kafka is very good in the clustered and failover scenarios, so you can have a Kafka cluster with multiple servers and topic with multiple partitions charted over the servers with replicas. And then you also, on the client side, can create multiple servers on different nodes, which as a consumer group can pull out the data there. And Kafka takes care, and the consumer group logic takes care, that each message is taken by a service, and when one service is going down, other services take over the responsibility to fetch the partitions of this service. Because without something like Kafka, you always are in a synchronization problem that when you have multiple clients fetching out the data, that only one should handle the message or so, and you have to handle this. And we are using Kafka in some projects, because it's and a lot of architectures and companies are doing this, because it's a very, very nice way to, and robust way to have a data decoupling of all the services you have and a replication of the essential data. Also, this in this context, if you're interested in this the buzzword CQRS is very, very common currently, where you just think event-driven, just saw the events, and are able to restore all the state in the components based on that. Okay, this was Kafka in 3 minutes. Okay, thank you. My slides are available at GitHub, so I have a talks repository that you can find the slides. Also, this is generated. Okay, the slides are online here. I guess when it's loading, then they're there. And I guess the link, oh no, that isn't that nice. But I have a talks repository, and this is marked down, so you can find everything here. And also the examples are completely there. Yeah, thank you for your attention at the time. Do you have questions? Yeah, late Sunday evening. Okay, then I thank you for attention.